prepare for a truth revolution.
Actually, you can't prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The Truth Will Set You Free.
And welcome to Truth Revolution. The truth will set you free.
Where faith meets reason.
Head to head, like peanut butter and chocolate, man.
Yeah, oh, man.
Uh-huh.
It is that good.
Yeah, faith meets reason. They can coexist together. You don't have to be a dummy to follow your faith. And you don't, you know, you don't have to give up your faith in order to actually research and find stuff out and learn stuff.
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. Today we're talking about something that I will tell you in just a moment.
Okay.
But first let me ask you this question.
You already told me what we're talking about.
I do this when I teach philosophy classes.
Okay.
All right. I usually go to the front of the class and I say, all right, everybody, I have a drink here. Who would like to take a drink? And everybody looks at me like I'm crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's always some football player in the first row that goes, I'll do it, I don't care.
Right.
And I go hand it to him, and he starts to drink, and I go, stop! There's acid in there, just for you to know. And they look at it, and he's like, dang, it's messed up!
Uh-huh.
I said, do you want to drink it? They go, no! And I said, okay, well, actually, it was just citric acid.
Right.
And it would have tasted like Mountain Dew. And they're like, man, why are you doing this to us? Now,
because that's the way philosophy class is.
Because this is the point that we're talking about today, okay? People don't ask enough questions.
Right. Exactly.
People don't ask enough questions. That's what our whole show here is premised
right.
on. Faith meets reason. We want you to question your beliefs,
mm-hmm.
not because we believe your beliefs are dumb, but we believe that they might not have been thought through.
Right.
And if your beliefs are not thought through, you might be believing something or living something that you don't want to believe.
And you know what? I mean, even if you are strong and founded in your faith and you know what you know and you know it is real, there's still nothing wrong with asking more questions.
That's right.
You
questions
should
are good.
Always test your faith every day to make sure that you're in the right place.
Exactly. Now, with that whole citric acid thing, the drink and all mm-hmm. that stuff, you know, eventually the kids get it in the class that I'm teaching. And so I hold up a drink and say, okay, who wants to take a drink? And their first question is, what's in it?
Right.
And I tell them, and they're like, well, what does that mean? And start asking all these questions. And I'm like, okay, good. Now we're asking questions about what we drink. Are you that careful with the ideas that people put in your heads all day long?
Right.
Whether you're watching TV, whether you're talking about politics, whether you're talking about religion, whether you're talking about science, are you asking questions? Are you just believing whatever someone puts into your brain?
Right.
Let me ask you a question, Dave. Is it okay to read someone's private diary?
Depends on whose it is. Whose diary is it?
It's a private diary.
Okay, the answer is no.
Okay, the answer is no. I saw on YouTube a video called My Private Diary, and it was someone reading their private diary. Is it okay for us to watch this type of video on YouTube?
I would say it is.
Why? Because you just told me it's not okay.
It doesn't matter what she calls it. It's what it is.
Ah, so your reasoning would go like this. Number one, reading a private diary is immoral.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, if someone posts their private diary on the internet, it really isn't private.
Well, that's them giving their permission.
Three, therefore, it is okay to read a diary on the internet.
I see what you just did, a logical argument.
So
there.
We just made a logical argument. Mm-hmm. See, this is philosophy. If we use philosophy, we can see what we actually believe. We can break it down into statements that make sense or not. And then we can figure out what we actually want our life to be like. If you build your life around a good philosophy,
right.
the decisions you make will be much more poignant. And true and
right.
strong and correct.
And let's be for certain, life is not just black and white.
No.
You know, life is varying shades of gray between the black and white.
Yo, man, look, I'm a pastor,
uh-huh.
right? I believe in God. I believe there is right and there is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most people live most of our days in gray.
Right.
It's not like most things are 100% wrong or 100% right. Most of it is some kind of shade of gray. And that's where if everything was so black and white, if everything was just, this is either super wrong or this is either super good, you know, you're either murdering somebody or helping a lady across the street, every decision would be easy. But most decisions aren't that easy. And so you have to have a philosophy of life that help control and teach you what it is you do and don't want to accomplish and do. Our concept for the show today is this. Philosophy is important because it controls the context in which everything else sits.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say that again. Philosophy is important because it controls the context in which everything else sits.
Okay. So do you think it's safe to say I have a philosophy?
Yes.
You have a philosophy?
Yes.
Chris over there has a philosophy?
Yes.
You think everybody on the planet Earth has a philosophy?
Everyone has a philosophy of
life. What about the person down the street that says, I don't believe anything. I don't have a philosophy.
That's a really stupid philosophy. Everyone has a philosophy of life. The question is it a good philosophy or a bad philosophy?
Okay.
Do you know what your philosophy of life is? Or are you just going through life willy-nilly? You have no idea what you believe. Yeah. All right. Now, again, like we've said on the show many times, we don't know everything, but I do know this. Everyone has a philosophy, has an outlook, and you need to ask the question, are your views rational or irrational? Are they true? Are they false? Are your beliefs carefully formed and precise or conveniently formed and fuzzy?
Right. So your philosophy will drive everything that you do.
That's right. That's what drives this show. Mm-hmm. Our philosophy is we need to know what we believe, and we need to know why we believe it, and we need to make sure that what we believe is true. And so we're going to question and make sure it's real.
Right.
That's our philosophy. Most people believe whatever religion they believe because, well, that's what my granddaddy believed.
Right.
That's why I was raised this way.
Mm-hmm.
Or I just happened to walk into a church one day. Or I just don't like people at church. Now I understand there's some times I don't like people in church.
Right.
But that's not a very good philosophy of life to reject the concept of God or the concept of a church being God's body.
Right.
Just because you don't like some people. You have to have a philosophy that determines your actions. Your actions shouldn't determine your philosophy.
Right. And that's getting back to the whole black and white thing too. Because if you had a bad experience in church, not every church is going to be like that.
Right. Yeah, it just comes back to the way we think about things. Mm-hmm. We are terrible thinkers in today's society. At Wheaton College, the Billy Graham Center at Wheaton College, a guy named Charles Malik was given an address. He said this, I must be frank with you. The greatest danger confronting American evangelical Christianity is the danger of anti-intellectualism. The mind, in its greatest and deepest reaches, is not cared for enough. But intellectual nurture cannot take place apart from profound immersion for a period of years in the history of the thought and the spirit. People who are in a hurry to get out of the university and start earning money or serving the church or preaching the gospel have no idea of the infinite value of spending years of leisure conversing with the greatest minds and souls of the past, ripening and sharpening and enlarging their powers of thinking. Obviously, he was trying to tell people to stay in college and to learn.
Right.
But I'm saying the same thing to every single one of us who hears this show. You have no idea the power, the infinite value that can come from sharpening your mind, ripening and enlarging your power of thinking.
Right. And we're not even talking about staying at a university.
No.
I mean, we're talking about you surround yourself with people who know things, who are intellectuals, and learn.
And talk about truth and mm-hmm. have good philosophies.
Definitely.
You know, you should listen to things like Truth Revolution Radio Show. I heard that was pretty good. Hey, speaking of, their website is truthrevolution.tv. You should go there and check it out. Yeah. There's lots of past shows, lots mm-hmm. of good stuff going on there. So
you can even donate.
That's right. We appreciate everyone who's helped us out, keep the show on the air. It's supported by people who listen to it.
Yeah.
So if you are interested in helping us out as well, go to truthrevolution.tv, and there's a link there for PayPal. Whether you have a PayPal account or not, you can use your bank card, your credit card, and go there, and you can donate to us.
Starts at 99 cents if that's all you want to donate.
That's right. So and there's a little bit. There's been a number of people stepping up and making it happen. We appreciate that.
We do.
The greatest danger confronting Christianity is anti-intellectualism. That's what Charles Malik said. I think he's right. What do you think, Dave?
I think that's true, because anti-intellectualism sounds like the degrading of thought, and you know, the basically the wasting away of
your brain.
Intelligence.
Yeah. What is
scary?
So I'm gonna teach that philosophy.
Do it.
Philosophy is
teach
important.
It.
Teach it. Or
teach
preach it.
It.
Preach it. I'm gonna preach it. Philosophy is, here's what it is. Let me explain what it is and why it's important. Philosophy is the attempt to think rationally and critically about life's most important questions in order to obtain knowledge and wisdom about them. Okay, that's what we want to do. That's what the show is about, thinking rationally and critically about life's most important questions. Not just doing la, 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 just going about your life like some, you know, three-year-old who just does whatever he feels like at the moment.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I did that all the way up until I was in my 30s. Seriously.
Who likes hypocrites? Do you like hypocrites?
I don't.
Okay, let me, and now whether you're, I don't care whether you're liberal or conservative, all right? I want you to have a philosophy of life that fits with your values.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Rosie O'Donnell, on April 21st, 1999, said this. I think there should be a law, and I know this is extreme, that no one can have a gun in the U.S. If you have a gun, you go to jail. Okay, now that's what Rosie O'Donnell said. Now, that is a philosophy that she has. It's a belief that she has. A lot of people disagree with it. A lot of people would agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the problem. She has a security guard that carries a concealed weapon with her wherever she goes.
Now, arrest that man.
Is that hypocrisy?
It is.
That's absolutely. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not like I hate Rosie O'Donnell.
Right.
I have things like this, too. You could probably point out a plethora of things in my life where I've, you know, said one thing and done another thing. But the point here is, if you have a philosophy of life and you surround your life around this philosophy and you think about it critically, then you won't be making mistakes like that.
Right. And unfortunately, I think a lot of our entertainers have basically a wavering philosophy. You know what I mean? It's something that they can kind of mold into what maybe they think people want to hear.
Well, too many of us Christians or people who claim to be Christians have the same type of thing.
Right.
We say, oh, here's what I believe, but then we go and we do stuff that doesn't fit with what we believe because we don't really have a philosophy of life. We're just doing whatever we think works at the time.
Right.
It's
calling ourselves what our parents called us and what our grandparents called us.
Let me ask you a question. Is it okay to make fun of someone's religion while you're talking to them?
I think not.
Okay. All right. Let's say we asked a bunch of people that question. They'd probably all say no.
That's
not a good idea. I'd say, is it okay to watch South Park? Or is it okay to watch The Simpsons? A lot of people would say,
sure.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Reasoning. We say, well, number one, it's wrong to make fun of someone's religion. Number two, certain TV shows make fun of people's religion. Three, the TV shows are not doing it to anyone specific. Four, therefore, it's okay to watch them. Five, therefore, it's okay to make fun of someone's religion as long as you don't do it to their face.
Right.
You see the problem here?
I see where that is.
All right. Who's the hypocrite now?
Right.
Okay. Look, maybe you could find a logical argument against me for saying that.
Mm-hmm.
And fine. That's fine. The point is, I want you to examine your life. I want people to think through what they're doing. And we're going to talk about how to make a philosophy of life. Now, I want to read to you a dilemma.
Okay.
And I want all the listeners here to think about this. In 1842, there was a ship struck an iceberg. More than 30 survivors were crowded onto a lifeboat intended to hold 7 people. As a storm threatened, it became obvious that the lifeboat would have to be lightened if anyone were to survive. So the captain who was on the lifeboat reasoned that the right thing to do in that situation was to force some individuals to go over the side and to drown.
Mm-hmm.
Such an action, he reasoned, was not unjust to those thrown overboard, for they would have drowned anyway. If he did nothing, however, he would be responsible for the deaths of those whom he could have saved. Some people opposed the captain's decision. They claimed that if nothing were done and everyone died as a result, no one would be responsible for those deaths. On the other hand, if the captain attempted to save some, he could only do so by killing others, and their deaths would be his responsibility. This would be worse than doing nothing and letting everyone die.
Right.
The captain rejected this reasoning, and since the only possibility for rescue required great efforts of strength and rowing, the captain decided that the weakest people would have to be sacrificed. In that situation, he thought, I mean, it seems absurd, but he thought to decide by drawing lots who would be thrown overboard was wrong. So he threw people overboard. He threw the weakest people out of the raft and forced them to drown to save the rest of the people.
Now, I know a way out of that dilemma.
Hold on.
Okay.
Maybe you do, maybe you don't. We're going to come back right after this break and see if any of the listeners have had a chance to formulate what they would do. Now, I have a couple other dilemmas as well, but if you had been on the jury, how would have you decided?
Mm-hmm.
Is the captain guilty or innocent of murder for throwing these people overboard?
Well, I only travel on boats with Olympic swimmers.
Wrong answer. Okay, we're going to come back. Check us out, shootherevolution.tv. We're going to answer that question.
Uh-huh.
We're going to tell you what in real life happened. So Yeah, this is.
Oh, that wasn't just a story. No, that was a real life deal.
This was a true story, wow. Right? So, yeah, check us out, truthrevolution.tv. Figure out, what would you do? Would you find the captain innocent or guilty for throwing people overboard and forcing them to drown because they were too weak? All right, be thinking on it. We'll be right back here. Truth Revolution, philosophy is important.
Truth Revolution.
And we're back after a discussion during the break of our philosophies and stuff like that. We're talking about philosophies and, you know.
Philosophies of life.
Are they important?
Philosophy is important. Hey, check us out. TruthRevolution.tv. You can donate there.
We got a lot of past shows there. You can check us out.
You can look up shows, send them to your friends, and tell them, hey, this one was awesome. This one stunk. Don't listen to it.
Don't listen to it, but I'm sending it to you anyway.
Okay, the question is, if you were the captain, what would have you done? But even more to the point, if you were on a jury, how would have you found the captain?
Well, here's the thing.
Because let me just remind everybody, if they're just joining us. The captain had to decide whether to throw people overboard or not. There was a lifeboat that could hold 7 people. There were 30 people on it. They weren't going to make it much further. So the captain decided to take the people who were weak and couldn't row and throw them overboard. Mm-hmm. And as it passed, after he threw them over and killed them, they rowed for days, and the survivors were actually rescued. And the captain was put on trial. So, what would you do? Innocent or guilty?
And that is a dilemma. I mean, some people say, well, I have a dilemma for you. And it's not really a dilemma. This is a dilemma.
This is a dilemma.
But by so doing what he did, he saved people.
Mm-hmm.
And therein lies the dilemma.
Right, because all 30 people would have died had he not done that.
Mm-hmm. So
the jury found him guilty. If I remember right. So the jury found him guilty. They said, it doesn't matter. Now, the question is, what would you do? Let's just think about it, people. If you're in a car talking to someone right now, if you're at a house with someone, what would you do?
I don't know what I would do.
I know what I would do.
Hmm.
And I'll tell you towards the end of the show.
Okay.
All right.
I'll be waiting with bated breath.
Number 2, you're an inmate in a concentration camp.
Mm-hmm.
A sadistic guard is about to hang your son who tried to escape and wants you to pull the chair from underneath him. He says if you don't, he will not only kill your son, but he'll kill some other inmate as well. You don't have any doubt that he means what he says. What would you do? Would you pull the chair out from underneath your son?
That's crazy.
Or would you refuse and let another innocent person die as well?
That's crazy. I'd stop time, switch their places, and then pull the chair out.
It is very convenient to have the power to stop time.
It is. Thank you.
I like how if you have the power to stop time, the only thing you do in that concentration camp is switch someone's place.
Well, you know, I don't know. That's a tough one. I mean, I don't know what I would do. I would be dumbfounded.
I know what I would do.
What would you do?
I'll tell you the end of the show.
Thanks.
A fat man leading a group of people out of a cave on a coast is stuck in the mouth of the cave.
Okay.
In a short time, a high tide will soon be on them, and unless he's unstuck, they will all be drowned except for the fat man, whose head is out of the cave. But, fortunately or unfortunately, someone has with him a stick of dynamite.
There
seems no way to get the fat man loose without using...
This is what we've come to on this show.
Without using that little piece of dynamite, which will inevitably kill him, but if you don't use it, everyone else will drown. What do you do?
I don't know. I'm never going spelunking ever.
But okay,
I know what you would do. Oh, I know you know what you would do.
Yeah.
But you're not going to tell us until the end of the show.
That's right. Okay. Don't get me wrong. I don't really think you're going to find yourself in a cave with a fat man stuck in the entrance.
You're making me scared to go anywhere or do anything, man. I don't want to be faced with the dilemma.
No, look, what we do with these things is we realize whether or not we formulated a philosophy of life.
Uh-huh.
If we know what we would do, well, then you have a philosophy of life. If you're not quite sure what you would do, you still have a philosophy of life, but it's not as explicit as it should be. We should have philosophies of life that are clear enough that make us say, in a dilemma, I know what I would do because these are the things I value and these are the things that I think are important.
Right. So act instead of react?
Act instead of react. That's a great way to put it. But you can only act instead of react wisely if you know what your philosophy of life is. All right, Roger Smith, quite competent swimmer, is out for a leisurely stroll. During the course of his walk, he passes by a deserted beer. You're laughing already. It's shaking your head like, here we go again.
I hate dilemmas.
All right, he's out for a leisurely stroll, this competent swimmer. During the course of his walk, he passes by a deserted pier, from which a teenage boy, who apparently cannot swim, has fallen into the water. The boy is screaming for help. Smith recognizes that there is absolutely no danger to himself if he jumps in to save the boy. He could easily succeed if he tried. Nevertheless, he chooses to ignore the boy's cries. The water's cold, and he's afraid of catching a cold.
Right.
He doesn't want to get his good clothes wet either. Why should I inconvenience myself for this kid? Smith says to himself, and he passes on. Does Smith have a moral obligation to save the boy?
I think so.
Okay.
I do.
If so, should he have a legal obligation?
Wow. You know what? Here's my philosophy.
Interesting.
Give me a dilemma. I'm going to make dilemonade. And that's all I'm saying about that.
That's horrible.
It is.
All right. Let me
stop you for a minute.
Sure.
I mean, are we going to do a Bible contradiction today?
Oh, yeah. Let's do a Bible contradiction.
Bible contradiction.
I got to get away from all this dilemma stuff.
Let me give you a dilemma. So there was this Bible contradiction.
This is a dilemma, actually. But one that I like. This is concerning idols.
Okay.
Okay. Exodus 20.
Did a fat man get stuck in an idol?
Exodus 24.
I have dynamite. I blow the idol up.
Exodus 20, verse 4 says, "You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above, or on the earth beneath, or in the waters below."
I would throw the idol in the river and not jump in to save it. Sorry.
Good man. However, Numbers 21:9. Okay, so Exodus says, do not make idols.
No idols.
Numbers 21, verse 9. Moses made a bronze snake and put it upon a pole. Then when anyone was bitten by a snake and looked at the bronze snake, he lived.
Okay.
What gives there? Do we have idols or don't we?
Oh, because Moses...
Should we or shouldn't we?
All right. Well, let me just state first off that there's a very common mistake that's being made here. It's not the actual answer, but I just want you to know this.
Okay.
Just because someone does it in the Bible doesn't mean it's the right thing.
That's true.
A lot of people do stupid things, and the Bible recorded it.
Cain killed Abel.
That's right. Doesn't mean Cain was right for murdering Abel. Okay. It just means the Bible recorded it.
All
right. Just because Moses made something that looks like an idol doesn't mean it's okay to make an idol. Now, that's not what's really happening here. Exodus 20 says, "You should not make yourself an idol." Verse 5 says, "You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord, your God, am a jealous God." So the question is, what are you worshiping?
Right.
If you're worshiping it, that's an idol. What Moses made was not an idol. People were not worshiping this bronze snake. They weren't bowing down to it and saying, "Oh, I worship you, oh great snake. You are my God." Or, you know,
just looking at it.
They were just looking at it. Mm-hmm. Okay. The second question to ask was the item made with God's authority or not? Because if you make this thing and you believe it has to do with your salvation, that would be an idol. So it almost looks like this bronze snake was an idol because people were looking at it for the salvation. But there's a significant difference here. It was made via the authority of God.
Okay.
And so there's what Moses did. Apparently, there was nothing wrong with it because he was doing it with God's authority. Come to find out, God was using this as an analogy. Everyone was dying from snake bites, and if they looked up at this bronze snake on a pole, they would be saved. And he uses that as an analogy for Jesus. He says, hey, everyone's dying, but if you look up to the pole up on the cross, if you look to Jesus, you will be saved.
Right.
He made that analogy on purpose. So God was doing that on purpose. So if you're not worshiping it, and if it's made with God's authority, it's not an idol. So there is no contradiction here, and that's the answer.
Bible contradiction.
All right. Let's get back to dilemmas. Yeesh.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. You're not really, but that's all right.
I'm not going to give any more dilemmas today if that
okay,
helps
right on.
You.
You're not going to give any more today, but that portends that you might be giving some later on. Like in the car on the way home or something like that.
I'm going to give some next week.
Yeah. All right.
Next week, we're going to do a little bit more on the philosophy thing. Mm-hmm. Actually, I like next week's better. But that's aside from the point. So, okay. Philosophy is what you call a second-order discipline. Okay, a first-order discipline is a discipline that studies subjects. It doesn't study the discipline itself. For instance, biology In biology, you study cells,
okay,
or DNA, or mm-hmm. all those little microbes in your body and little things. Okay, that's what biology studies.
I liked biology so much I took it twice in high school.
Music, you study notes and singing and mm-hmm. music. History, you study history and facts and okay. dates and names. Mathematics, you study the numbers and the concepts and all that. Those are first-order disciplines. A second-order discipline, like philosophy, is a discipline because it studies disciplines, not subjects.
Okay.
Okay. Philosophy does not study a subject. It studies other disciplines. For example, philosophy does not study biology. But philosophers can study the discipline of biology. You can ask questions like, is it moral to do testing on living things?
Mm-hmm.
And this is where philosophy gets important. All biologists can, by very nature of their work, do tests on living things. Philosophy can ask the question, is it moral for a biologist to do this? Is it moral or reasonable for us to whatever? We can ask questions like, what is life? Biologists study things that are alive. But philosophy asks the question, what is alive? How does someone form scientific laws? That's a philosophical question, like thermodynamics. How do we know how to test it? How do we know what it's safe to conclude? Those are philosophical questions, not scientific questions. And when you get into really big danger is when you are a first-order discipline and you are ignoring second-order discipline questions. Because you're just doing what you're going to do, and you're going to town.
Mm-hmm.
You're a biologist, and you're just studying, and doing, and doing.
No regard,
because that's your discipline. That's what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Until you have to learn to think about these second-order discipline questions, like, wait, what is moral for me to do? I can do this. Is it the right thing to do it?
So is philosophy based on morals? Or no?
Morals is one facet of philosophy.
Okay.
But... There's a understanding morals can't be done correctly aside from philosophy.
Okay.
All right. Even if you know God directly and God tells you right versus wrong, you have a philosophy about what you believe about God, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I believe that God is true and God is moral, and I believe that God's going to tell me what is right and wrong and what the right thing to do is, and so I'm going to obey God. That's your philosophy. So your philosophy informs you about whether or not you are being moral. All right. So... now, to these dilemmas, Dave,
mm-hmm.
what is, we could just say, as a sea captain, you know, would you throw someone in the water? I mean, that's his job as a sea captain. Or mm-hmm. is it, we can ask the question, is it moral? I've done my philosophy of life. I'm going to tell you more about it next week. But according to my philosophy of life, if I was on that boat, I wouldn't throw anyone overboard. I myself would go overboard.
Mm-hmm.
I would jump overboard. If I was in the cave with a fat man, I wouldn't blow him up. I couldn't blow him up.
Right.
If I was the inmate at the concentration camp, I would not pull the chair out from underneath my son. I would offer to go in his place, but right. I wouldn't pull the chair out. If I believed that the guy who was a competent swimmer had a moral obligation to pull that boy out of the water, but not a legal obligation.
Right.
So, and I can give you these answers. And it seems like, okay, well, he gave decent answers, but they're based on my philosophy of life. How do you form that? How do you know it's right? Next week on Truth Revolution.